All right. Good morning. Welcome, everyone. It's nice to see you. We're coming to the end of our month of focus on the Parami of Resolve, but I hope it has been just the beginning for your practice with this Parami, and it seems like that might be the case, since resolve isn't something we do once. Last week, we took some time to reflect on and share with each other some specific ways we could implement our resolves. We looked at a list of implementation ideas gathered from the talks this month at SIMS and from some of our resources, which are listed on our research page on the SIMS website. And we took a bit of a workshop structure last Sunday, and hope that that was helpful. And we're going to try it again next month. We'll see what your feedback is about that. Today, I'm going to close with a talk going further into the practice ideas that we looked at last week with some tweaks and elaboration. And I'm going to use my own resolutions as examples. So, in case you've forgotten or you weren't here last week, I'm going to screen share that list. Okay, can you see that? All right. So, this is what we came up with. And these are not in order. And this is not an exhaustive list. So, it's kind of a brainstorm list. So, one thing is that you can ask yourself, what am I most deeply committed to? You can start with reflecting and contemplating that. And it probably takes more than, one moment. It's something that you just keep thinking about. What's my deepest commitment? You can resolve to begin. That's very important. Taking one step at a time. You don't have to accomplish everything immediately. And it's okay to be uncomfortable in your process of resolve. And Carrie called it, let your shakiness be unshakable. So you can be shaky, but just keep at it. Success and failure. We've all talked, all the teachers and the resources talk about how just resolving, even when you fail, you still learn and you can come to wisdom and peace and kindness with success and failure because you're learning. Resolve to be steadfast. So when you have an obstruction, begin again, just like we do when we meditate. And then resolve to continue. Have a firm heart and be focused. This is what we're doing right now. But at the same time, we take the middle road, like the Buddha said, and we need to be kind to ourselves, patient and compassionate and accepting with what is. And the phrase that Philip Moffat uses, as best I am able, we can always connect with that. We're doing as best we are able. We can join with others. Let's do this together. We can have a witness that helps us with our resolve. We'll share with someone, this is my aspiration. This is my intention. These are my accomplishments. Look what I did that I haven't been able to do before, as well as our failures. So sharing is really important and having the Sangha with you. We pay attention. Usually, resolve has a lot to do with letting go of something. But at the same time that we're letting go, we're allowing something else to develop. And we may be focusing more on the letting go or the developing, but they're both involved. So keep those both in mind. Understanding the drawbacks of what we want to let go of can motivate us to let go, and understanding the benefits of what we're developing can motivate us. So paying attention to those, that's what the Buddha did. So his heart would leap up. And we're in the middle of our, well, we're beyond the middle of our study this year. So we have a lot of paramis that we can that can support us in our resolve. And it works both ways because our resolve can support us in developing the paramis. So they're a good pair. And we can find specific phrases that kind of touch us, or words, or songs, or poems, or mantras to keep us going, that touch our heart. And we can ask ourselves, is there a ritual that helps kind of firm us up and seal our commitment, or a physical movement like Tuwheri's bowing in the forgiveness ceremony that we did? Some kind of movement that helps us stay the course. So those are just some ideas, and again, not in any order. And just wanted to share those again. So now I'm going to go back to my talk, hopefully, and I'm going to stop the screen share, as Suze told me to do when I forgot a few times ago. I remember now. So you can just pick one or two, whatever. Maybe nothing, nothing seems good to you, but these are just some ideas, and you probably have come up with some yourself. So what I did start with the first one. Think about your aspirations. What are you most deeply committed to? This took more than a day. I have to say that when we were practicing with it last week, I was still kind of figuring out, brainstorming, well, this one, or so forth. So we don't have to start with a lofty aspiration either. We can start with a mundane task and resolve to experience it in a more enlightened way. We can start with an internal focus, looking inward at our motivations, our thoughts, our feelings, our intentions, or an external focus. We can think of something we're going to do in the world. We can start with something concrete, like I want to stop eating meat and poultry, or something closer to a formless aspiration, like I want to open my heart to all sentient beings. Intentions need resolve to be carried out. And whatever the intention or aspiration, any process of resolve is going to develop wholesome qualities like a firm heart, consistency, right effort, patience, discernment, reflection, and self-compassion. Ajahn Suchito talks about this a lot. He says when resolve is aligned with any of the other paramis, it strengthens them. Your aspiration involves one of the paramis we have already explored. Maybe your aspiration involves one of the paramis we've already explored. Resolve is needed when we run into resistance, and we will run into resistance as we work to manifest our good intentions and aspirations. So when I began, I asked myself, what do I really want? I knew I was looking for an aspiration that would answer the question, why am I on this path? There are two Pali words for two kinds of wanting. There's tanha, which means thirst and is connected to craving and the three poisons in Buddhism. And there's a wholesome kind of desire, traditionally called chanda. This kind of desire is described by Ajahn Suchito as the kind of desire that is essential to persist in the path out of dukkha or to commit to meditation. It's a yes and not a pathology. In fact, he said you could summarize Dhamma training as the transformation of tanha into chanda. So we're not trying to get rid of desire. We're trying to transmute it, take it out of the shadow of gratification and need, and use its aspiration and vigor to bring us into light and clarity. And I think this is really important to remember because it seems like to me that as I aspire to achieve what seems to be a noble goal, I have to keep practicing discernment and asking, is there any shadow of gratification or need lurking in my aspiration? Because it is a kind of wanting, and so it would be easy to make it a need gratification. And I'm going to talk about that more later. But back to what I really want. I brainstormed a list, and as I did that, a poem came into my mind that has meant a lot to me. And that's in our list too, to find phrases or poems, something that inspires you, helps you keep your resolve. And the poem is by Izumi Shikibu, a famous Buddhist poet from the 11th century Japan. And it's translated here by Jane Hirschfield. Very short. Watching the moon at midnight, solitary, mid-sky, I knew myself completely, no part left out. I didn't know when I first heard this poem, which was at a Brahma Vihara workshop a few years ago. But I read that in Buddhist cultures, the moon is often a symbol of an awakened mind. So I just thought that was nice to have as part of my inspiration. And I thought, I do really want to know myself completely, no part left out. I have a history with poetry, probably a lot of you do too, and parts of poems come up often in my mind to remind me what's important or to clarify something I'm trying to understand. When I thought of that poem, I could feel my heart stir. This aspiration was motivating to me. Ajahn Suchito says we should ask ourselves, does this intention hold my interest? And I could say yes to that. He said we should also ask, do I have the capacity to persevere with it? That was something I had to think about because it was a pretty lofty aspiration to know myself completely, no part left out. I remembered someone sharing, and it may have been Arv, that Sylvia Boorstein's intention, she's another resource person we have on our resource page, that every time she sits down to meditate, her intention is to become enlightened. And when Ajahn Suchito was first asked why he wanted to practice to be a monk, he said he wanted to stop wanting. When he was first learning to meditate in Thailand, his goal was to become enlightened. But he said gradually his outlook shifted from getting enlightened to being aware of the mind a moment at a time and being content with that. So I don't think it hurts to aim high if you can be content with steps along the way. And I thought that just having a goal of not leaving out parts of myself would be working on inclusion and being with rather than rejecting. And that would help me develop a more accepting outlook toward myself, which I thought could also help me be more accepting of others. So as I reflected on this aspiration and thought more about whether I could make a resolution, I thought more about whether I could make a resolution plan to go with it. And again, an image, well, not again, but an image came to my mind, which was from the Zen series, the 10 Oxirgic Pictures. Some of you may remember that we studied those in 2022, and they described the Zen training path to enlightenment. I remembered specifically the first picture of the ox herder when he starts out on the path searching, and he appears quite unsure with an undefined longing for something. I could identify with that. I thought of the picture of the Enzo circle representing emptiness in the middle of the series, which kind of looks like a moon. And I remembered the final picture where the ox herder returns to the everyday world, the marketplace, with his hands extended. And that reminded me that knowing myself completely is a worthy aspiration because it includes knowing my true self under the layers of conditioning. And it asked me to learn how to integrate and how to have one foot in the world of form, relative reality, samsara, and one foot in the formless, absolute reality at the same time. I was impressed when Ajahn Suchito talked about the value, about valuing the joy that makes it possible to be, both live in and see through the world at the same time. He called this kind of activity self-emptying. So I could see some themes to my aspiration taking shape, and it was interesting to me. I was inspired by the image of a being able to extend hands to others in boundless caring. And I decided that I would add images to the items in the helpful ideas list. I thought images can also inspire us and help us clarify our resolve. And then I noticed how often I referred to Ajahn Suchito, and I realized that he is a role model who inspires me and shows me the way to take action. And I added role model to the list. But enough with inspiration, it was time for action, which takes us to another idea on the list, which is resolve to begin. Take some concrete steps, one at a time for a start. What would my resolution, look like? First, I rephrased it so it was easier to practice and observe. And I said I want to develop a more wholesome relationship with myself, which includes being more self-compassionate and reducing my selfing habits. That's coined by senior teacher Christina Feldman, selfing habits, that helps me. And thinning the self, which is another one coined by Rodney. So those practices are things I want to develop, self-compassion and less selfing. And I decided I would pay attention to all parts of myself, the parts I like and the parts I don't like. I want to appreciate when I'm kind and caring to myself and others. I don't want to discount what is good in me. At the same time, I want to develop patience and acceptance around what I don't like in myself. When I feel uncomfortable and vulnerable, I want to stick around and look into those feelings and find out what's going on. Yesterday, I had the opportunity at Nina's Metta Daylong. We were practicing Metta for ourselves. I was saying the phrases, may I be safe from inner and outer harm, may I be happy, may I be free. I remembered being unkind the day before. And I was feeling critical of a lesson my French teacher gave us. I said something in class that was subtly critical and definitely came out of a critical intention. I didn't like myself for being unkind. And I noticed another student in my class who was able to give some feedback in a kind way. And I was comparing myself to that person. And I wondered why I behaved like that. And I thought about my aspiration to not leave out parts of myself. And I felt how hard it was to feel the remorse for deliberately being unkind. The teacher didn't deserve that. When it was time to do walking meditation, I looked for a metta phrase that would help me with self-compassion so I could learn from my experience, because getting stuck in judging wasn't going to help me. I realized that I was being critical of the way the teacher designed the lesson. And that way was very similar to how I had sometimes designed lessons when I was a teacher. I made them too hard, assuming the students had skills I hadn't taught them. I was intolerant of my teacher because of a failing that I was intolerant of in myself. I was projecting. I still felt bad, but at least I understood that I had turned, my inner harm outward toward her. And that allowed me to look at my own dukkha and see that maybe some kindness toward myself was called for. And I remembered my ex-husband telling me many years ago, some people need to tighten up and some people need to loosen up, and you need to loosen up. I knew it was true. As I was walking, I thought, that's it. I need to lighten up. I need to have a sense of humor about my failings and forgive myself. My judging mind was at the root of my harming, And I saw myself taking my own self-criticism so seriously that I had to become the lesson police for my teacher. I finished my walking meditation with the phrases, "May I lighten up, may I forgive, may I move on." I didn't plan to take a concrete step in my resolve yesterday at Nina's Metta Day Long, but I think I did. I remembered my aspiration in real time. I felt resistance, but I persevered. And because of that, I learned something about having a better, kinder relationship with myself that might also help me be kinder and less judgmental towards others. I want to finish by talking about two other implementation ideas that I plan to work with that are concrete. One is, let's do this together, have a witness, share your aspirations, your accomplishments, your challenges with others. And the other is there a ritual that will affirm your commitment or a physical movement that you can repeat to help you stay on course? So I plan to set aside, and you guys are my witness, a designated time to focus my resolve, and I will do a self-retreat away from my home for, I think, 4 days. The Buddha recognized that it's more difficult for lay people to practice renunciation and resolve in daily life. So he recommended to his lay followers that they observe day-long periods of temporary renunciation. In the Buddha's time, it was 4 days out of each month on the new, the full, and the half moon days. On these days, they were asked to take the precepts. They took eight, but I'm thinking I would do five. The purpose of taking the precepts is to restrain the senses. And the day was then devoted to listening to Dhamma, to clarifying right view, to practicing meditation, and to strengthening right concentration. So I have a friend who recently did a 4-day self-retreat and told me all about it. And I asked her to be my mentor advisor. For her retreat, she set up a daily schedule for herself, planned how she would cook and eat her meals, set up Dhamma talks to listen to and Dhamma teachers to confer with over the course of the retreat. She said that it was challenging. She needed to reach out for some support in the middle of the retreat, but she resolved to stay and she stayed till the end. I thought that was an example of unshakable shakiness. And it inspired me to put myself in a situation that she, like what she described, with few distractions and lots of opportunity to be in stillness with my mind, I would have space for different parts of me to show themselves. I will make sure to have a structure that supports me and opportunities to contact teachers and spiritual friends when I need to. I'll make sure I'm in a place where I can connect with nature and with the internet so I can listen to the Dhamma talks. And I'm going to go over all of this with my friend. She knows me well and I trust her retreat experience. During my retreat, I plan to see if a ritual or ceremony is something that will help me honor my resolve. I was really impressed with Ajahn Sucitta's practice of getting up at 3:30 every night of the rains retreat and putting whatever thought appeared to him on the stupa, bowing to it as he circumambulated. I'm not sure. I might just write in my journal, but at least I know I will have time and space to be creative if I want to be. The last thing I want to say is kind of a caveat to myself, and it's about resolve and the desire to become, which is a form of tanha or craving. I can see that desire could get mixed up, that desire could get mixed up with my aspiration. My aspiration could turn into my wanting to be a better me. I think the key is to keep paying attention to my mind and heart states, moving toward compassion and away from judging. And that means both compassion to myself and to others. Yeah. Compassion and judging. Yeah. Compassion for myself and others, and also judging myself and others. So, yeah, that's my example of my own resolve and using some of the suggestions, ideas. So I'm concluding there, and thank you for listening. And so I just really thought that we could go into breakout rooms and go further in the resolve, that maybe one that you're already working on, or one, a new one. And we have the list of all the paramis. So it's, if you want to resolve, make resolutions about any of the paramis, that's always an option. So I'm going to put you in breakout groups. Hopefully you can stay and you could talk about a current resolution that you already have established and how you're implementing it, how that's going. So that would be an opportunity to share with others your accomplishments or any challenges. So it's not really a lot different from last week. And or you could talk about, you know, choose a new resolution. You could pick a new parami or something, something specific, or something, a process of choosing even, is you could share that. So I'm going to put you in breakout groups here. Okay, so it looks like there are 16, so maybe I'll make 4. Okay, have fun. So what are you guys all resolving? And how's it going?
I can say that I've been feeling such a glow after yesterday's retreat that I changed my resolution, which was, my other one was kind of harsh. And I thought, this is beautiful, because all into the evening and this morning, I've just faced everything with such equanimity and sense of humor. And I thought, well, I'm just going to carry forward this glow from the loving kindness retreat. Thank you, Nina. I'm going to see how I can bring this forward, how I can call this up. And the image, of course, that I'm using is the Dalai Lama's smile. I mean, just calling that up. And I think we were all talking in our group about the remnants of yesterday and how it really made a difference.
So that's interesting. I'm wondering, we could add something like that to our list. So you said calling up an image and a glow. I'm just taking notes for myself.
Yeah, and the word that kept coming back to me was just gentling, gentling, gentling.
Gentling, ing.
Gentling, yeah.
Yeah, very, very, that's inspiring to me. Thank you. Yes, Judith. You have to unmute.
Yes, unmute. There, okay, I'm unmuted. I had a realization also during the breakout group about the retreat yesterday, because I had some complications during the day. I had my son and daughter-in-law and grandson coming up, and I was supposed to meet them for lunch before they went on a tour of Western for my grandson. And I got this text that they were stuck in this gigantic traffic jam in Everett, and they weren't going to make it to lunch, but I'd made reservations. It was just this kind of day. And then finally I saw them after the tour, but I was going to have to go in and out. And it's this kind of thing that normally might get me all rushing around and stuff. And my resolve is to stop rushing around, right? And to be present. But because I was in such an amazing space from the retreat and from all this meditation and all this metta, I just kind of floated through the whole thing. I went and had my own little salad at the restaurant and talked to the waiter and everybody saying, oh, I hope your people make it out of Everett. And it was just lovely. And then I came back and did more retreat. And yeah. And I thought, well, why can't I be that way all the time?
Can you think of how we could put that on the, what is this? Both of you are kind of talking about a similar thing. What I'm just curious. I mean, it would be nice to kind of be able to express that as something that's important in resolve.
Well, essentially it was being present with each thing that was happening and not being attached to having it go a certain way. It clearly was not going to go the way we'd planned. But it was okay. And just being okay with that, being with it, and just going with the flow, like we used to say in the 60s and 70s.
Yes, I remember it well. Okay, thank you so much. Who else would like to share about resolve? Suze.
Mine has to do with going back to the very first parami of generosity. Because I shared in my group, I had a moment last night of really experiencing the stinginess thoughts that come up. And the, you know, my needs being more important than other people's needs. And how I shared how I'm trying to practice between the generosity of acceptance of another human being with whom you're in relationship. And next to it, I'm bringing my hands up because I feel that there's this rub. This one is the generosity and acceptance, and this one is my needs. And what happens in that tension? And so I'm resolving to understand that more and see if the power of my intention to be generous, and I know how good that feels for me and others, if I can just practice with discernment and wisdom and keep feeling how icky the stinginess and my needs are more important, how icky that feels and the dukkha of that. And then anyway, so I'm going back to the very first one. Which feels important to me.
Thank you, Suze. Thank you so much. Nikhil.
Yeah, something that I've been trying to be aware of with resolve recently is, it's related to, I think, something Tuari had, and in response to a question that Tuari had given during, I said, I think maybe months or maybe years back. And the gist of it was essentially someone was asking, should I do X or should I do Y? And like, kind of what's the right choice to do? And Tuari's response was that there isn't really a right choice. There's just a choice made with mindfulness. And so, you know, whether you take one option or you take the other option, as long as you bring awareness and mindfulness to what you're doing, and you're aware of, you know, how does this affect you? How does it affect the other person? That's all that you can kind of really do, right? And I think with resolve, that's something that's been helpful for me, because so often it feels like there's like resolve needs to have this like buckling down or this kind of like tightness. And kind of like what I shared in the group was that something I'm working on recently is just like cutting down my YouTube usage in the evenings, because I end up just kind of getting stuck in this loop of just like looking at video after video and getting to bed late. And just, I'm not actually, I think it's really just kind of causing me suffering as opposed to joy. And, but it sometimes feels like, oh, I need to like kind of like buckle down and just like break this habit, break this cycle. And, something I've been trying to bring to it recently is kind of what Tuari talked about, where I don't need to, the resolve doesn't have to be towards the action. It doesn't have to be towards the, whether I watch YouTube or whether I don't. But can I, regardless of which decision I make, can I be aware of what it's bringing? You know, if I do end up watching YouTube, can I be aware of, well, am I getting out of this what I wanted to get out of it? Is there suffering, you know, is there, you know, yeah, like what all is present when I make this decision? And when I don't watch it, what all is present when I make that decision? And I guess like retooling, kind of like refocusing the resolve really more towards the, as opposed to trying to like force myself to do something, which is hard and kind of just, sometimes just kind of goes in the wrong direction. Can I just be aware of what all is taking place when I make either decision? And then that awareness kind of leads to, you know, if I end up watching YouTube and I realize I'm actually kind of making myself miserable, it's a little, you kind of like naturally just leads to like a different choice after a while. And so, yeah, I think that's like, that's been, I've been kind of working with this past month.
Very interesting. It's kind of like wisdom, you know, it's understanding, investigating. Yeah. So you learn a lot. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it also helps. I think it also helps me figure out, is this something that I actually do want to have resolve towards, if that makes sense? Because sometimes I think it'd be easy for me to feel, oh, I need to do this thing because this is the right thing to do, or this is like the mindful thing to do. And when I try to refocus the intention just towards being mindful about whichever choice is made, it also helps, you know, either reaffirm there's a reason that I want to have this commitment towards this thing, this change of behavior or whatever it is, or maybe it's not what I thought it was. And there was this delusion about, you know, what I thought would actually ease myself, or where I thought my suffering was coming from or where it wasn't. Mm-hmm. So it helps also, I think, evaluate that as well.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Oop, it's 11:29. Thank you for those of you who shared, and thank you all for being here. And sorry, we're leaving Resolve, actually. We've got some really cool things starting. So we'll have to check back in with each other as we get to loving kindness next month. So that brings us to the end. And oh, Donna, yeah. We appreciate, Sims really appreciates Donna, and we have co-guiding teachers whose support is helped a lot by Donna, and we want to keep them. And we also, you can volunteer. That's really helpful. So please think of Sims with your Donna, and thank you for the Donna you've already offered. And also, our merit. Let's just do a meta. May we all benefit from our resolve, and may many, many beings benefit also, because resolve is for the good of all sentient beings, really. And may we support each other in our resolve. Okay. Thank you, everybody.